From Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Friday edition of The Drive. Another beautiful spring day. Hope everybody doing well as we get ready for a big weekend. There is a lot going on here locally. Of course, it is also Final Four weekend. We'll talk about that. But it is A-Day weekend. It is, you've got Auburn baseball, softball, men's and women's tennis all competing on campus on A-Day weekend. We have some audio that we can run for you from Butch Thompson and Ike Irish about baseball, obviously. And we've got tons of audio from players that we have talked to here over the last few days as far as football practice. Love to hear from you. Are you going to A-Day? Do you, if so, you know, are you, even if you're not going, if you're going to watch it, or if you're following it, what would you like to have happen?
I mean, spring football is something where you should really be careful about, you know, temper the expectations
sure.
as far as.
Sure, but you don't want to see things like, well, the offensive line just, you know, not able to block, or
but even
receivers
then,
not able to catch the ball.
Well, receivers dropping is different, but if the offensive line can't block, at least you come away
maybe,
kind of excited about the defensive
maybe,
line.
Maybe it's good news for the defensive line.
But
yeah, if the quarterbacks are throwing the ball into the crowd or to the other team and the receivers can't catch anything,
I mean, you
fumble an awful lot.
You'd love to see accuracy and timing from the quarterbacks.
Yes.
You'd love to see big play potential from the receivers, even if that might make you kind of nervous about the secondary and who they're up against. My thing, you know, one, it was pointed out earlier this week in some of the, and I said this earlier that there was, there's less buzz around this, around this spring than there have been previous ones where it's either a new coach or a new quarterback or a quarterback controversy. When was the last time Auburn had a returning head coach and a returning starting quarterback in the same spring? How many times in the last 7 or 8 springs has Auburn had both of those things?
Like, Bo's sophomore year?
Bo's sophomore year with Gus was probably, uh-huh. I guess.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people that are very interested in this. There's not as much negative buzz,
right.
I've sort of come across.
I would agree with that, but I would say when you don't have one of those two things, when you don't have either a first-year head coach and all the intrigue that goes with that, or a bona fide quarterback controversy / competition, it can deflate things a little bit. You know what, tomorrow, but one thing that is important is there are guys on this team that are going to get more playing time tomorrow than they get all season.
Sure, that is always the case with the spring games.
And that's something I think to be celebrated, is some guys who maybe this is the most. I mean, I had friends on the team that were walk-ons, mm-hmm. and the most they got to play in Jordan-Hare Stadium in front of people was tomorrow during the spring game. And that's true of this team too, right, Bill?
I mean,
They're not on the Bill Cameron depth chart or at the top of it.
You know, there will definitely be some non-scholarship players, some players who you know, a lot of folks in the press box may not be familiar with that get an opportunity to play a lot and make some plays tomorrow. And good for them because, I mean, they've earned it by being out there and going through all these practices.
Right. So I think that's a cool thing about spring games in general, and something that, you know, for all the push of, I don't know, you got writers and fans who want to turn spring games into, you know, a program invites a different program in and they play an exhibition football game or something. You'd lose that. I mean, you would lose the
the
end of the depth chart guys getting to play a little bit in front
of
the stadium.
That's
which is
true.
I'm just saying, like, I mean, that's something to remember. Like, if you want to make this a,
what would you rather though? If you're especially in a situation where you have here where you're paying money, would you rather see your guys?
Here's my question.
I think one of the things we talked about a little yesterday, I don't know that a lot of coaches would want to play their first bunch an awful lot, but they still think they get more out of playing somebody else.
For folks who want to see a different program come in and play, like in an intra-squad spring game, my primary question is, Bill, are the quarterbacks live? Are we hitting the quarterbacks in this program versus program?
They may not be.
At that point, you know what I advocated for in the Observer is if you're going to play,
let's do 7-on-7s.
Well, either do 7-on-7s or, you know, honestly, pull the scholarship players off the field and have a bona fide full contact scrimmage with live quarterbacks. Like, take, you know what? Let's have a, if you have enough to do it, if you have 50-something players.
You think there'd be a whole lot of interest in watching the walk-ons scrimmage?
Saying, well, do whatever you want to do. Have a skills competition or do whatever to involve the star players. Make it a end of spring practice party. But the aspect of it that's going
to
be
now,
real.
I think if it came down to either or, then your quarterbacks are live. I think Hugh Freeze would say, okay, your quarterbacks are live.
Yeah, I just wonder how much enthusiasm there'd be.
I mean,
for
look,
that
quarterbacks are just as liable. I mean, a guy's just as liable to get his knee twisted tomorrow and be out for the next for the entire season.
I would be surprised if we were anywhere close to a world where we have like program versus program full contact quarterback live spring games. Like that would be, I think it would be a, it'd be cool.
Well, I mean,
it'd be cool if everybody's on board.
High schools do it in the fall.
Right, and all
they do it in the fall.
All the good reasons are there. I just wonder if that would be a bridge too far.
I don't know.
Especially for the superpowers that are worried most of all about having everyone available at the start of the season and at the end of the season. I just wonder if Michigan's and Ohio State's and Alabama's, I wonder if they would see it as an unnecessary risk. Not worth whatever risk you're taking. I think they'd be
willing to risk their 2, 3, and 4 guys. If you know who your starting quarterback is, I think you might want to find out who the next best one is. And the best way to find out is put them out there live.
The thought of holding guys out and
certain
playing,
guys. Yeah. I mean, not necessarily every team.
Sort of the NFL preseason game model, yeah, which would be maybe there's a drive of starters versus starters,
right,
and then you would. I mean, that's something to be explored. I still wonder if the more risk adverse coaches are going to be thinking that it's not worth whatever bad could come from it.
Wouldn't be participating, yeah, in those kinds of scrimmages.
Is it tomorrow that Fox is showing? Is it Michigan and Ohio State?
I know their spring games are coming.
I know it's later this month. There aren't as many on television.
No, they're not.
But Michigan and Ohio State are both, I believe.
Alabama's is, but I mean that's understandable because it is completely new. It's Kalen DeBoer. What's it going to look like? So I don't know. Anyway, we'd love your thoughts. Are you going or do you care? What do you want to hear about? What would you like to have happen tomorrow?
I'm excited to see these receivers. I haven't been able to go to practice for the, you know, I'm doing the show while Bill's in the window.
I think most of them will be available. Everybody was out there with the exception of Coy on Tuesday. Now, Sam Jackson, I don't think is going to go through the practice. He'll go through whatever warm-ups and things like that. He's running all the drills. He's catching. They just don't want to take any chance with him coming back from shoulder surgery. You know, you don't want to take a big hit on the shoulder before it's completely recovered.
Ohio State's spring game is next Saturday on Fox, the 13th. And then
ESPN's got Alabama's next Saturday.
And Michigan's spring game is April 20th on Fox. Okay. So back-to-back Saturdays where they'll have spring games at noon.
All right, we'd love for you to join in, though. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise here on this Friday afternoon.
Even with the spring game coming, I still think the biggest piece of news we're waiting to hear about in the Auburn sports universe. Do you know where I'm going with this sentence?
Jahni Broome.
It's absolutely right. That's absolutely correct.
That definitely is my first thought.
Waiting to hear the decision from Jahni Broome. Mm-hmm. Understandable whatever he wants to do, but he can declare for the NBA draft. He can come back to Auburn and play another year of college basketball. And that's because of the repercussions it has on next season of college basketball, even with the spring football game tomorrow, Bill. Like I feel like waiting to see what Jahni Broome decides to do over the next couple, and I would imagine, I mean, this is a decision that could come at any time. I mean, it could come, but, you know, before, and I have no, if it actually happens before the end of the show, I knew nothing, Yeah, I just want to be, I'm not.
That would be a nice way to open up A-Day weekend.
I'm not foreshadowing anything here. I don't know if we're going to get a Jani Broome decision today or anytime soon. I would imagine, depending on your definition of anytime soon, that we could get a Jani Broome. I mean, what do you think?
I would think before the middle of the month. I would think before the end of next weekend.
Yeah, I think we're within a week or so of whatever deadline Auburn would need, mm-hmm. because it's going to be difficult to recruit any potential Jani Broome replacement with Jani Broome sort of lingering as a possibility. They would love to have him back, but if he's not back, the sooner Auburn the sooner Auburn knows about it, the better, so they can start making alternate. Speaking of basketball recruiting, J.P. Beguiz, I believe, came out with the final four. Came out with the last four in the last.
Has he added somebody to it? Because he was only going to take three visits. Those were South Carolina, Auburn, and Florida.
I believe Oklahoma also found its way into.
All right, so maybe he's going to make another visit because those were the only three visits he had scheduled. So I guess that's actually not great news. That means he's added somebody to his list after he visited Auburn.
And that suggests that he knows what conference he wants to play in next season with Oklahoma joining three SEC teams on that list.
All right. We've got a fun show for you. Should have Barrett Salee, who I would imagine is either at the ballpark or on his way to the ballpark for the Braves home opener
on
today.
On Striday, right?
That's right. It's Spencer Strider today.
That's right. As getting the start in the home opener against the – how about this?
Against the Diamondbacks, the defending National League champions.
There you go. Last year's National League champion.
Is that crazy or what?
Well, you want to talk about crazy.
Well, it's crazier that the Texas Rangers actually are the defending world champions.
Well, and I think one of the crazier stories of the week is just how well Monday night's LSU-Iowa game did in the ratings,
mm-hmm.
and where I think these TV games, where these women's basketball championship games, how these because you got two tonight, right?
Yeah. Do you think
Iowa-South Carolina, if we get it?
I don't think the numbers will be as big. Because you don't have two superstars
but an undefeated South Carolina team is a draw.
You do, I think my feeling is a lot of it is social media driven too. It's sort of like the explosive interest in the Kansas City Chiefs once Taylor Swift started Travis Kelce
or the Dion effect at Colorado
Absolutely.
So, I mean, and the effect you saw.
And there's nothing wrong with it. That's great.
But it's like Colorado. What was it? Colorado Nebraska was the game last year that outrated Alabama Texas when they were both on the same day. And there are people who believe that, especially if it's Iowa, if we get Iowa South Carolina, the women's championship game is on ABC. This year, the men's championship game is on cable. It's on TBS. Fewer people have. TBS is only in about 70, 75 million homes at this point because fewer people are subscribing to cable and have that.
I still think there will be more watching
men's. Folks, we'll see. But with ABC in twice as many homes, three times as many homes, whatever the number is these days, there is a chance that with the women's basketball being in so many more homes, we'll see. Especially if it's Caitlin Clark. I'd say if you get Iowa South Carolina, there's a chance that that's a game that shatters ratings records and things. And the Iowa LSU game outrated.
Well, that's Caitlin and Angel.
That's right. At Iowa. So Monday night's Iowa LSU game outrated every game from this past year's World Series, which is shocking to think that an Elite Eight.
Mm-hmm.
Women's college basketball game.
Again, I don't think it's love of the sport.
No,
I think it's.
But here's the thing:
wanting to see those specific people.
How many people who know who Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese is couldn't name you a single Texas Ranger,
who Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese are could name any of their teammates?
Yeah, couldn't. Well, sure, but also probably couldn't tell you an Arizona Diamondback.
No, you're right.
So much of it's superstar driven, and the superstars at the moment. I read a fascinating article about how over the last two or three years.
I believe so.
I haven't had a Friday show in a really long time.
Oh, remember? I know. We're supposed to get Barrett at 4:15.
Okay, so. we'll get to Barrett. But the college the women's college basketball deal ESPN signed has become the best bargain in any sports media rights deal.
They just need
deal.
To make sure that they keep stars.
Keep it going. But even for what they're paying now is a fraction of what you know, teams are, you know, of what you know, networks are paying Major League Soccer or the NHL or something for games that are rating far higher at the moment. We'll see if the championship game continues that.
All right, we'll get to our first break. Barrett Salee should join us on the other side. Stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
Want to pay your
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Friday afternoon. We are efforting Barrett Salee, but I know that he's either already at the ballpark or getting ready, because he is about as diehard a Braves fan as you're going to find. I did not realize he's now the AJC's Braves Report host, as well doing his college football smothered and covered.
So I know you like numbers briefly on the, because it is women's Final Four day. You know the two games are tonight, championship game coming up this weekend. So, because I know you like numbers, Iowa LSU did 12.3 million viewers on Monday night. That would make it the eighth most watched non-NFL. That would have, had it happened in 2023, it would have finished as the eighth most watched non-NFL sporting event of the year on television, ahead of any day of the Masters, four games in the NBA Finals, every game of the World Series, every game of the Stanley Cup Finals. And ESPN, at the moment, a new contract's going to kick in soon. ESPN is paying more for the rights to the American Athletic Conference than they are for the rights to the women's tournament. The tournament is believed to cost ESPN about $65 million, the women's NCAA tournament. So I was, you know, it's from the awful announcing article about, did ESPN suddenly land the best bargain in sports? And like you said, if stars can continue to break out in the women's game the way Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark have, there's absolutely a chance of it, because the effect the effect we've seen there, and it's you know, it's alchemy, right? It's tough to it's tough to get the combination right of everything that creates superstars, but you do and how long has golf been waiting for the new Tiger, right? So there's no guarantee.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
There's no guarantee that a phenomenon is going to continue to, you know, with a new player, but yeah, I mean, certainly the growth over the last couple of years in the women's game. And I would expect ratings records this weekend with Caitlin Clark still alive and UConn and South Carolina part of the party as well. I would think that those are going to be three games with very high levels of interest this weekend.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that.
And South Carolina, Iowa, if we get it, would be pretty massive, right? Mm-hmm. Undefeated South Carolina team,
right? Against Caitlin Clark,
in
her last game.
Against Caitlin Clark in her last game. I'm sure if ESPN could script it, they're not. Oh, yeah. They're not doing it. I'm sure ESPN. Although, you know, UConn has an audience too. UConn's won a couple of these.
Yeah,
things.
Yeah, they have.
There's a UConn following. It's not. I feel like in this case of. And NC State would be an upstart, you know, if they beat South Carolina, you know. But if in the case of Iowa or UConn, ESPN's getting a pretty strong brand there in the championship, no matter what.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, that you've got a couple of programs that are doing okay there, men's and women's wise.
With
two of the Final Four.
I believe this is the first time we've ever had two schools with teams in the men's and women's Final Fours at the same time. We've had one team. I believe UConn has done it before. UConn won it.
Twice before.
Yeah, they've done it. They've done it before. But we've never had two schools with representatives in the men's and women's Final Four at the same time. That's what we have this year with UConn and NC State, which is still, to me, Bill, the crazy. I mean. These story of the NCAA tournament, the men's tournament, maybe it's how dominant UConn has been. I understand
that is one story, because everyone expects there to be that, you know, that near miss, that close shave, which UConn has, you know, sort of taken care of that for the last 2 years.
Do you get the feeling people might longtime listeners will remember that Bill and I both called the Alabama upset of UNC?
Mm-hmm.
Do you get the feeling that Alabama has the moxie, they've got the stuff, they got the juice to be the team that beats UConn?
I think they can play them closer than some of these other teams have. Now, that doesn't mean they won't get run out of the gym just like everybody else has, because if they go cold for a little bit, UConn can bury them. But, man, Alabama has shown a very they've shown a very good ability to come from behind. They were down 13 the other night. I mean, they've been down double digits. I believe I've seen 11 or 12 times and come back and won. And of course, a younger son pointed out, well, that means 22 times that they've been down, because when they lost, mm-hmm. they lost a lot of ball games not close. They lost a lot of ball games big.
No, overcame a really cold start to the Clemson game. Right? They were not playing well in the first 8-10 minutes of that game and really bounced back, and Clemson saw a 13-point lead whittled away. Grant Nelson maybe played his two best games in an Alabama uniform over these last two in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. I saw a stat about him in the Elite Eight. It had been 15 or 16 years, Bill, since anyone in the NCAA tournament had a game with 20, 10, and 5 blocks. Like it had been a long time since anyone did it. And then Grant Nelson did it in the UNC game. And I want to say the UConn Post did it too in the Illinois game. We went 15 or 16 years where no one had mm-hmm. 20-plus points, 10-plus rebounds, 5-plus blocks in an NCAA tournament game. Grant Nelson does it against UNC. Two nights later, the really impressive big for UConn did it in their drubbing of I think that was in the Illinois game where he was able to do it. So it's that is a matchup. We've wondered about Alabama around the basket all year.
Yep.
Now Grant Nelson's playing well, and you wonder, you know, how is the matchup going to go for the other team? You know, what are they going to be able to do? And I still think Bama probably needs 20, 22 threes. You know, that feels like a number.
Yeah, I think they need at least upper teens, at least.
UConn, I saw UConn's field goal percentage is very good against teams that try to shoot early. Like UConn has been a team this year where teams that try to shoot first 15 seconds or so in the shot clock do not shoot well against UConn. So that's something that, I mean, it's Alabama's strength. You know, yep. most of their shots are, especially after the other team misses, most of their shots off defensive rebounds are within 10, 12 seconds of the shot clock expiring. That's something that apparently UConn is prepared to stop.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. And
a couple of teams in the Big East, I think, try to play that way. And so UConn's been, you know, they're a little bit prepared mm-hmm. for it, even if maybe they haven't seen it with Alabama type players at that speed.
And it is the second game tomorrow, 5 o'clock start or shortly after for the Purdue NC State game, and then the Alabama UConn game to follow it somewhere around 8 o'clock tomorrow night. 334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Love for you to join in. Again, we've got tons of audio we can get to as we move on through the show, but you can give us a call or you can also text us.
334-564-1840 is the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors, and that's available wherever you they also sponsor the podcast. Podcast of the Drive available wherever you listen to podcasts.
I don't have a definitive answer from Barrett Selly. I can't read you the whole response, but it's like his phone was on the press room table while Snicker was talking. That's why he couldn't answer.
Okay.
When we called a couple of minutes ago, and I went, so we will see. But in the meantime,
tell Snicker to stop talking because you got to go.
Well,
do the
I think
drive
he's picked
there.
It up. Snicker's done talking now. But we'll get to the Drive Hotline, and Ed is up first. Hey, Ed.
Hey guys, I was just gonna. I had a quick question. I'd read an article. I didn't realize this, but you know, a lot of times we talk about rules and how they change, and are going to change a lot of ways. But Zach Edey not being able to make any NIL money because he's from Canada. Don't y'all see that change, and they can't keep that up?
So I believe the issue there, Ed, is that this is not something the NCAA has any control over. This is a federal government issue with immigration law, because it has to do with how much money you're allowed to make if you're in America on a student visa. And what I've been told is that the guidance, it varies from school to school, but generally speaking, schools tell players you can accept NIL money at your own risk. The federal government, immigration, could come in and say you've violated your student visa by accepting this NIL money, and you have to go back home. You gotta, you know, they could deport you, I guess, is the threat. And so there's been very little traction over the last couple of years, from what I understand, as far as getting clarity from the federal government, from from Homeland Security or whichever branch would be in charge. Maybe it's Immigration Services, but whoever would be in charge of this, it's been tough to get an answer.
Well, I guess I went after. I said the wrong thing when I said the NCAA. Well, I would say the same thing about the federal government. I just see this changing. I don't think we have many terrorists coming in to play.
It's unfair, and I don't think it was. When folks sort of devised the rules,
changing. That was my point.
I wonder when they're going to. I just wonder if the rules for NIL could change before we get clarity on.
Yeah, I think that may be the case.
What happens there? Because there'd be a new sort of. If schools wanted to start employing student athletes, there'd be a whole set of. Issues, hurdles to clear with regards to foreign players and how they could be compensated. But you're right. At the moment, it doesn't seem like a fair system if foreign players are denied opportunities at NIL because it could jeopardize their status in America.
And there's just too much money to be made, for the schools in America that want to get those players. They're not going to allow them to go to school outside.
Money. Ed, if you remember the big rebounder from Kentucky, Oscar Tshiebwe, from a couple of years.
He was
from the Dominican, and there was sort of conflicting information about whether or not he was accepting NIL money. But I remember some people thought. I mean, he left eligibility on the table. To go pro, and folks thought even though he wasn't projected to be a high pick in the NBA draft, and people thought maybe it was because there is concern about how much NIL money he can accept.
Well, let me just talking about him, having to go pro, and I won't keep too long.
Sure,
I know y'all up against.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
On the women's side, it is unfathomable to me that they're. Salary is $70,000-$80,000 a year when they go pro, and they're making millions in college. Don't you? I mean,
WNBA drafts. I mean, rosters are small, and the salary pool is very limited, except for what the absolute
the
top players are making.
Is $1.2 million, isn't it?
I thought the maximum was a little bit higher than that. Maybe that is what the WNBA max is at these days.
Well, it's something close to that. I don't see why you have to have any maximum salary that will have in any other sport, do they?
No, you don't. Well,
the NBA does. The
reason you have that is because if you don't have income coming in, there's just so much that people want to just keep spending and spending. I don't care how rich you are, you don't want to just keep spending it if there's nothing refilling the reserve.
That's a reason why a lot of American players, especially pre-COVID, were playing internationally during the WNBA offseason. And that's why endorsement money was more important for WNBA players, even for NBA players, because NBA players are making more in pure salary.
Well, one great thing about this for future, I mean, women's basketball is really taking off right now. And Caitlin Clark and Paige and the whole thing, 12.6, they have more viewers than the average than any Thursday night NFL game last year. I mean, that's a lot of viewers. There's got to be some renegotiating going on and get these girls a little money, But anyway, that's just my opinion. Girl sports.
So Ed, there's talk that Caitlin Clark is she plays at Iowa. The Fox Network shows Iowa games. If Caitlin Clark were to leave Iowa and go to the WNBA, she would start playing. She would start playing on ESPN because ESPN has the rights to the WNBA instead of Fox. And so there are folks wondering if it would be a smart investment for Fox to offer NIL money to Caitlin Clark to stay at Iowa and play another year on the Fox Network instead of going to the WNBA and playing for ESPN. We could see, I mean, I don't know, a couple years ago, we're so far behind Milo's, Bo Nix being sponsored by Milo's. Now we're talking about TV networks giving kids NIL money to stay in college because they would get to stay on that TV network. And you know what? She's earned it. Whatever, if Fox comes up with a dollar amount, to keep her in Iowa for another season, she's earned every penny. She has earned every penny of that money.
Let me just guess, when you're talking about Milo's, you're talking about Milo's tea with Bo.
Yeah, that was the first NIL deal in Auburn history was Bo Nix repping Milo's tea at midnight.
Hey, I love Milo's too. I spent a lot of time in Birmingham. The burgers, the fries, you just dip the fries.
Hey,
you get after
what's the story?
I was going to say a guy we used to work with on campus wrote the jingle for Milo's.
All right, well, cool. All right, guys, War Eagle.
Everybody go.
Thanks.
That's right. Appreciate it, Ed. Good stuff.
We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love to hear from you.
Steve gets mad at us when we shout out non-sponsors like that, but it's you know, I mean,
we didn't bring it up.
Yeah, and they're pretty good.
Yeah, so. No kidding. All right, it's a good come product. On in and join us here on the Friday Drive.
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. We mentioned a big weekend, A-Day weekend. Dan talking, I mean, look, the men's and women's Final Fours this weekend. Auburn baseball hosting Tennessee and a must-win series for the Tigers. And the media had a chance to spend a little time with Butch Thompson yesterday as he talked about the pitching plan for this weekend and more.
Yeah, excited about A-Day weekend. There's a lot going on campus, so we've been on the road two of these first 3 weeks. It's going to be awesome to be back home for this weekend, next week, and try to make the most out of trying to scratch and claw and try to get back in the middle of things in this league. So looking forward to our fans. Like our last game with Arkansas was pretty amazing, and you just feel like a lot of people are ascending on Auburn this weekend to come back and be part of A-Day, and so much going on around campus that I think that'll make Plainsman Park a pretty hopping place this weekend.
Butch, obviously starting out of the gate has been an issue. How do you handle pitching heading into this weekend? I know depth is a strength. Do you try to lean on that a little bit more?
Yeah, I think that's exactly where we're at. And, you know, we've all year long we've announced three starters and been straightforward. We feel like we respect the game, respect everybody, but I think this is one of those to where we put all of our pitchers together. And I've never meant when I say one inning, one pitch, more than ever than what we'll do. I think Watts is a guy that we'll put out there to start tomorrow, and he's a guy that we know that can throw two times a weekend. We started unveiling more of that last weekend with a few guys, so you got some guys that have absolutely now can get into throwing two times a weekend, and I think we'll just try to find a recipe, and I think after playing one game, we might have a better feel of, you know, who can get us started, what's the matchups, different parts of the lineup. So we'll do a good job of letting our opponent know right after the ball game, you know, who we'll start with the next day, to be respectful from that standpoint. But this is more of us. We've gone back this week, and players have come back through and tried to get back to, like, this is my identity, this is who I am. And that's kind of the hope that I have about the ball club, is I think everybody's continued to work and find strategies instead of moping or laying around or wallowing in this deal. I think we're taking some steps that'll absolutely be good for us. And I just didn't want, you know, especially I think also Gonzalez to feel the weight of the world. And if our strength is in the percentage or how many guys we have back, let's put them all together and see if we can chop it up. I think SEC averages about 4 2/3 a start for even the best teams, for everybody. And so we're a little bit shy of that right now, of course. So we're going to take a different approach to maybe like you see in the midweeks, where, you know, you use a 5 or 6 guys and don't feel bad about it and think that might be a recipe to find yourself again as a pitching staff. So I'm trying to think of this weekend as strength in numbers, to put a title to your question there. And I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that's where we're at. And I think it's healthy, and I think it's the right move. And I think now's the time to implement.
Coach, going back to Watts, would you like him to maybe get through the order once and then move on to the next guy, or what would you like to see out of him for that first start?
Win the first inning. And if you can do go out for one inning and win it one, then you get a second. So I'm thinking 11, you know, go get one inning and do it well, and then you get a second and a third, and, you know, we'll see how that goes. I think we're really comfortable with him for three innings is what we've seen. If he squeezed some more out of that would be awesome. If he's one time through the lineup and then we absolutely make a change there, that'll be okay too. I do like the resilience in his arm. He threw twice last week, I think midweek, through game two against A&M, and you know, once that thing went extra innings and he had to cover more, I think he was willing to come in a third time. So last night was good for us. I think Parker Carlson was one of the guys, if you think of the seven or eight guys that you need the most on a weekend. He got us out of a big bases loaded jam last night. But other than that, I thought, you know, some guys, again, Petrovic, I think it was Crotchfelt, Murphy, did a nice job for us to keep, you know, the guys that we really need to step up to the plate. We need to get Bauman going again. If he can't give us two or three innings a weekend, that makes it more challenging for us. But I just want everybody to get reset. We're one pitching staff. Whoever's on the mound at that time is our number one pitcher. Let's get behind that. Let's not forecast or hope for anything. Let's just take it an inning at a time. And whether Watts just goes crazy and gets us, you know, more innings than we think, we'll do that. If it's chopped up and we think, you know, it's game time early and keep giving him different looks is the way to go, then maybe he could help us a second time on the weekend. But his resilience is, we at least need to name somebody to get us started, and that's why we went with Dylan Watts.
Just with the starting pitching approach, I mean, you've had a pretty lengthy career as a pitching coach. Have you ever encountered this sort of setup or tried this setup with the staff before? And then I guess just second part of that, what does it say about this staff that you're willing to head into an SEC weekend series and maybe try a little more of the by-committee approach, so to speak?
Yeah. I think it's probably happened 20 of the 23 years I've been in the league that you get to this stage. It feels like the last 2 years at the very front of the season. You know, our deal was also is a guy that, you know, I still believe in, and maybe if people don't prepare for him as much, he still could get a start this weekend. So I want to make sure I'm checking myself here. There's still I still see a path where he could get a start this weekend, and Joseph could. But maybe they would be better throwing a sixth and a seventh inning and give us two innings and not feel the weight of the world. But our recipe, if as much as I still like this, our club, and really nobody's done anything wrong, we probably, especially the two road SEC series, we hadn't pitched competitively enough, because I know I thought the last game at Vanderbilt and all three at A&M that we had a chance to win every one of those ball games. But Alsip and Gonzalez would have had to be, you know, and we know Gonzalez is trying to come back and get back, but the time's kind of now in some regards to hook something up and get it going. I still think both those guys could have a chance to be part. They'll be on the 27-man. So we'll have every intention of those guys potentially factoring in. I guess they both still could start, but I would expect them to probably throw it somewhere in the middle for us, and just see if somebody can step up, somebody can do something amazing, because I do think it's a tough draw of, like, who's it going to be, you know? And in all honesty right now, I don't even know. I just know Watts is going to get us started on Friday, and I'm good with it. It's happened every single year. This is how we found Tommy Vail last year at Florida. We did Cannon. He went about five innings. We won a game. We're up 8-3, I think, on game three at Florida. But we found Vail that day, and he wound up pitching those last five weekends better than any pitcher in the league last year. So it may be an opportunity. But I want the guys to feel like it's strength in numbers instead of somebody having to flip the lineup three times or have that expectation or that weight on them. I'm good if we bring in a different pitcher every time. I've heard Ike's in the room. I've heard these guys talk about, man, sometimes it's more challenging for them when they got to see a new guy every night, like on some of these midweek things. We need to take a look at something else before we start breeding insanity of doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. So we're on a hunt to, like, staying with them, believing them. I still think also Gonzalez can help us, but we need to go find ourselves a little bit more. And that's, like I said, I think that's happened about 20 of the years I've coached in this amazing league. And it's unorthodox, and almost what's so amazing about this league is it's almost normal to get to this point.
Coach Eric, is it Guevara?
Yep.
And he got his first start, and then Kate Bellevue, is that right?
Bellevue.
Seems like his bat's coming around. Are those two guys that could figure into the lineup a little bit more this weekend?
Yeah, I think we're pretty committed to Guevara once we felt like that he had a chance to play. I think he got a pinch hit last week. Now, he wasn't released until Monday. Of course, we didn't get to play Tuesday. We got to play last night, and he got to start. I hit a ball hard to right field. I think he walked. He got on a chopper, I think, shallow six hole that he was able to make it out. Made a great play that he ranged in front of Weiss. Again, coming through the six hole shallow, made a play at first, dropped a pop up. But we'll have to see how he feels today. Where does he factor into this weekend? So we've seen him play a game. We're going to commit to him, and I think it's the right thing to do. I think he's a heck of a ball player. I think our staff and players think he can help us. That was huge for him getting a game last night. And we need to see it practice today, how he feels, how he bounces back, and can he play every other day? Where's his breaks going to be needed? We'll start learning that today to see how he bounced back from last night. Cade Ballou, I think, was a spark in the ball game last night. I think in the same inning he hit two doubles, and that first time he came off the bench and hit a big double. Pierce hit a home run. That's huge. We've been competing really good with our offense and defense has played good enough to help us do a little bit more, and they've stayed engaged. And Ballou's it's a big bat. It's a very athletic. We absolutely have respect for the potential that he has, and you know he's starting to do a little damage. Had a huge pinch hit single the other night against A&M. He's banged a ball, so he's into three or four doubles and a home run and a pinch hit at bat in the last few times he's gotten in there. So just whenever that happens, you'll see a guy earn more. And there's so many older players playing in this league, but we think Ballou and Guevara have a great future in our program. And right now, we're going to keep committing to Guevara. And Ballou seems to have a hot hand right now, being able to come into a ball game and impact it. So the future's now for those two guys right now, and I think they have some type of role, or we feel like we want to get them involved in what we're doing currently.
That's Butch Thompson as the Tigers get ready in a little over an hour to host number 4 ranked Tennessee. And that's going to be really interesting as they go into it with the whole staff approach, sort of a bullpen mentality, saying that, you know, that Joseph Gonzalez, Chase Alsop could get starts, but you could see him in the middle of a ball game. So it's just it'll be really interesting to see how things go. The Tigers have been able to swing the bat. Tennessee really can hit the ball, too. So there could be some runs in this series. We'll get to our final break here of hour number one. Love for you to join in. We've got more audio we can run from football. We also got some Ike Irish, but we've got plenty of football interviews as we get ready for A-Day weekend. Come on in and join us here on the Friday Drive.
I'm Jessica Samuel with Opelika Power Services. Opelika Power is committed.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final minute or two here of hour number one. Before we get to the top of the hour, and we'll get to Jerry here momentarily, looks like Chris Beard staying at Ole Miss.
Yeah, about that. Ole Miss, after warding off not all that long ago, a pretty serious attempt by Auburn to poach Lane Kiffin. Now you've got Ole Miss warding off a pretty serious attempt by Arkansas to go get their basketball coach. So kudos to Ole Miss and Chris Beard looking like he's going to stay and try to build something at Ole Miss, putting out a statement well, putting out something on Twitter earlier today, and now reports are that he has indeed closed the door on being the next coach at Arkansas. And who was it that said Jerome Tang at Kansas State?
John Rothstein. John Rothstein. CBS.
You know, and I would think maybe Will Wade would also be.
I think he's on the periphery. Again? Yeah, but it looks like Beard and Tang were the top two. Let's get to Jerry here before we run out of time. Hey, Jerry.
Hey guys, I saw the other day where a prominent coach posted that a good big man would cost $250,000 to $300,000 in NIL money.
What about an All-American big man? That probably would cost probably you even more. That. Yeah.
So, what are your feelings about Janai staying and also doing?
I think Auburn's willing to. I think willing and able to handle that and more.
I think it's not going to be a financial decision necessarily because Janai is going to have the opportunity to earn money if he wants to be a pro. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, Janai will have the opportunity to earn money if he wants to come back to college basketball.
Oh, yes.
You know, whether it's at Auburn or if he wanted to open the recruitment anywhere else. But there would be interest in having Janai back for another year.
All right, we need to get to our top of the hour break. Back with hour number two here on the Friday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Friday Drive. Hope everybody doing well. At the here at the beginning of what appears to be, looks like it's going to be a beautiful weekend. Temperatures about like they have been for the last couple of days, with highs maybe around 70. It's going to be chilly at night, but just gorgeous weather. Enjoy the springtime. Enjoy the weekend, everybody, if you've got plans. I mean, there are a lot of things going on here locally with Auburn University's A-Day game tomorrow. Auburn baseball, softball, men's and women's tennis all playing this weekend. We let you hear some Butch Thompson in hour number one. We've got audio from some football players about A-Day and about spring practice and Auburn football. We've got a little like Irish if you want.
We were talking off the air about this upcoming baseball series and the rest of the baseball season. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that this is, I mean, it has become a fire drill for this offense, for this pitching staff.
Like it's funny.
All hands on deck, and you know, everyone ready to go whenever they need to be called upon. And the question is, I mean, can they find somebody?
I mean, one of the things Butch was asked this in the interview that we ran a little while ago. He was asked, "Has this happened, or how often does this kind of thing happen?" And he said, oh, in about 20 of the 23 seasons, they've needed to find someone and really give more people opportunities. Pointed out that last year Tommy Vail took advantage of that opportunity, and nobody in the SEC pitched much better than he did, if at all, down the stretch a year ago. They've been sticking with Chase Alsup as the Friday starter, and Joseph Gonzalez getting a start, moving Connor McBride into the rotation, but they just haven't been able to get deep enough into ball games. That's been bringing some of the bullpen in a little earlier than they would like. Tanner Bauman, who had been so good, struggled his last time out. They're just trying to get folks straight. And he said, you know, they're just going to go at it as, all right, everybody's available, and whoever's on the mound, that's our ace. Everybody pull for them. You're going to get your opportunity. If you do well, you know, you could get another inning. But it's going to be inning by inning, at least here at the start. So it seems radical, but they did something very similar last year when Auburn got off to a slow start. Their pitching was really being hit hard. And, you know, Auburn's 1-8 right now in conference play, but they have played this will be the third top five team that Auburn has played, and they played two of them on the road. And yes, they were swept, but they had chances. They have been in those ball games. What they've got to do is find a way when the offense does put some runs up to be able to go out. They've got to get a zero put up in that next inning, and that has been the biggest problem. So,
Auburn's offense has been good.
Oh, the offense has been really good.
But there are excellent offenses all around this league, and it is so tough to get outs. And it's that's where you know the wheat is separated from the chaff, right, Bill? Like is where you know.
Oh, you're not kidding.
When you can find a way to consistently get outs on top of stringing together runs, and that's something Auburn is. We'll see. Now Auburn has played three genuine national championship contenders.
Yes,
and they're about to play a fourth. They don't have that many of those kind of games coming up, but they still have good teams left on the schedule. So I mean, it's going to take it's going to take a turnaround to get to 13 or 14 SEC wins. We'll see if Auburn can do it with an all hands on deck approach with the bullpen.
Yeah. Now Tennessee, who's coming in tonight? I just pulled up the SEC baseball statistics. Tennessee is leading the league. Tennessee has a team batting average.
Oh,
what would you guess their team batting average is, Dan?
What's the first? The first number's a three?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, the first number's a three. Second number's going to be a three?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. I'm doing this off the top of my head, folks.
Yeah. Well,
third number is a five.
No, it's 332.
Okay, all right.
332 as a team coming in tonight. I mean, Auburn's hitting 286.
You got the on base?
Let's see. Their on base is 434. Not as high as Georgia's, 454.
Team on base of
434. Wait a minute. There are
getting
only
half the time.
One, two, three teams in the SEC that don't have a team on base of at least 400. Missouri has got three, is a 357, and then Florida's 392, right, and Vandy's 395, and everybody else is above 400 as a team.
Well, you better have pitching at the on
base. Tons of base runners.
Yeah, there's base runners galore. So, I mean, Auburn's not the only team struggling to get outs right now when you look at the conference stats, but they got to turn it around.
And Auburn's team ERA, as bad as it has seemed lately, Auburn's 10th in the SEC with a 519. Tennessee comes in with a 373 team ERA. So I mean, you can see why they're ranked in the in the top five. A huge challenge tonight over at Plainsman Park.
Should be a pretty lively crowd. A lot of energy.
Oh man, with all the folks in town.
Yeah, I mean, great energy, good weather, and a sold out crowd tonight.
You might want to take a wrap.
Little
ball
chilly.
Game tonight.
Little chilly.
It's going to be in the 40s tonight.
Could get chilly, but clear.
Yeah, because that's one thing. You look outside and it's so beautiful now, but when there are no clouds at all, that means the temperature is going to drop like a rock.
Yeah, gonna be low 40s, maybe high 30s in the area at a sunrise tomorrow, and then and some nice maybe a little bit of cloud cover tomorrow for the spring game. But yeah, nice weather hopefully all weekend, cooperating with so many outdoor activities.
Yep, we'd love for you to join in here in hour number two of The Drive, and the second hour as usual, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And you can join us here on The Drive by calling The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Again, 8-8 tomorrow, and I believe most everybody is available.
Coy Moore and Camden Brown, right?
Camden was out at practice Tuesday, going through the full workout. Sam Jackson.
They might hold those guys out of contact.
They might,
though, right?
I mean, Sam Jackson. I don't think. I mean, he hasn't gone through any contact all spring.
He's been in a non-contact uniform.
He's been wearing that yellow jersey all spring.
So what receivers are going to have an opportunity tomorrow with those guys hurt?
I think Camden's back out there since he was going through the 11-on-11. I think everybody but Coy Moore and Sam Jackson will be out there. Jay Fair. I mean, because Hugh Freeze had told us that Jay Fair and Camden Brown. He mentioned Coy as well, but some of the guys had been missing some time. They didn't have all those guys for the scrimmage. I think they'll have the other ones out there. Somebody we found out yesterday will not be out there tomorrow. And I didn't realize he hadn't been out there all spring participating normally. It's Alex McPherson.
Right.
Because we usually don't.
Hamstring injury comes in the season?
Late last year, and he hasn't really kicked. So Towns Magoo going to get plenty of opportunities tomorrow. I think
could you see Towns
as a kick? I could see him at least being a kickoff guy this year,
handling kickoffs, possibly, and then you
he's
know,
got such a strong leg,
saving Mac for the for field goal duty in what could very well be Mac's last year as a college football player.
Yeah. So, but I think most everybody is good to go. Some of them, I think, the ones that have really proven what they can do, You may want to get there. Make sure you're there early and you watch early because they may not be participating the entire time. It will be 4 10-minute quarters, and you know they're prone to run that thing as it gets going. So, but we've had a chance to talk to
any freshman you're particularly excited about. I mean, because it feels
well. Everybody talks about Cam Coleman. Yeah. I want to watch the freshman linebackers. I want to watch the young guys in the secondary.
I keep coming back to I talked about it with Justin again on the podcast. Was beyond McLeod, a lot of youth. Right, like it's a lot. I mean, after Jalen McLeod on the depth chart.
After him, it's a redshirt freshman and two true freshmen.
Right,
that are going to play a lot.
But impressive looking.
Oh yes,
young men, the three of them. And Joe Phillips was somebody. I told this story on the podcast, Bill. Joe Phillips was one of those guys where he walked through the interview room. I remember pulling Caldwell aside, being like, "That's a true freshman. Like that's."
Most of these guys don't look like freshmen.
No, they don't. And Joe Phillips looks like a guy who's, again, you got to be careful with this when you're talking about how someone looks in the April of their true freshman season. But he looks like someone who can get on the field.
Oh yeah, and he will. All right, 334-321-1390. Let's get to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, and Yellowhammer is up first. Hey Yellowhammer.
Hey Hammer.
Hey afternoon. So picking up on the earlier discussion about how there are ball players in a quandary, you know, should I stay or should I go to the pros? You know, where can I find more money and so on? So here's me, the attorney in me, trying to parse language and find a loophole. I have not passed the bar, though, so one call doesn't do a thing at all. But here's the deal. I'm a fan or an alumni, whatever, and I know there's this player who's juggling whether he should stay or go, and I say, well, I'll pad your palm, and, you know, you can stay. And, you know, it's like the old days where it was secretive, but, I mean, can I just do that now and say, okay, he's advertising for me. He's telling everybody what a great guy I am. I don't have a business, but I could have a business, and so, you know, he's plowing the field for me.
The avenues for fans for fans to contribute. You know, I mean, you have NIL collectives which take donations. You also, as a business owner, could probably sponsor a player for some sort of professional thing. I don't know if if person to person donations are still, you know.
I just wonder what the NCAA would do about it, if that's what you claimed he was doing.
Maybe there'd be some tax implications, you know, of just giving someone money, right. without some sort of stated, you know, without the necessary paperwork.
Service they're providing.
But NIL collectives in a lot of ways operate sort of like super PACs, you know, in politics where, you know, it's crowdfunded. Maybe there are people who are funding it more than others because they have deep pockets, but it's crowdfunded, and then they take that money and they do what they want with it. And in the case of an NIL collective, they can give that money to a basketball player trying to convince him to stay in school instead of going to the pros.
Well, there's tax implications through NIL, isn't there?
Yes, there are. Yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely. They're going to be responsible for the taxes.
I believe that's one of the things. While schools aren't allowed to hold your hand through like negotiations with NIL, you know, for with brands and how much you should make, like schools have to keep their distance legally from some of that. Schools are absolutely allowed to provide NIL finance resources, things like.
Call a player up and said, "Here's some money."
I don't think the NCAA would take that too well. I mean, I think you'd need to at least set something up. You'd need to. I mean, if there weren't going to be any services that they'd be providing, I think you'd need to at least make it look like there were.
Yeah, and there are still some rules in place for eligibility and things like that. I mean, we've had, even in the NIL era, we've had players who were disciplined for things can pop up, whether it's improper benefits, impermissible benefits, mm-hmm. these terms that were they seem antiquated because we heard about them a lot more pre-NIL, but there are still rules that are on the books at various schools, state, local laws, things like that.
But it's still a mixed up, shook up world, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Well, thanks. Bye.
Appreciate it, Yellowhammer. 334.
Don't just call players and offer them money, I guess would be our professional advice in that situation. Like, go through the proper channels. You know,
if you say I've got an opportunity for someone to, use their image and likeness to further, and then whatever it is that you've got, I'm sure there are things you could do. You could you'd be able to get that done, but
I mean, I'm not opposed. I'm not saying don't donate and don't use the NIL space to however you want to. I'm just saying maybe don't in the case of Yellowhammer's call.
Yes, don't
cold call players and offer them money because you want them to stay in school. I don't know officially if that's still against the rules, but
I think it is.
But I've got a
feeling that it is.
How about it's good advice? I think is probably the
I would say. All right, 16 minutes after 5, we'll get to our first break of hour number 2. We have more audio from players. We talked to a couple of the veterans we spoke to yesterday. Always good. Luke Deal, Eugene Asante. We've got an Ike Irish interview. More baseball. Well, you want to hear one of those?
Yeah, Asante's always great. I mean, he's sort of the heart and soul of this defense,
right?
Coming up and this season. One of the leaders that everyone's agreed on. Love to hear what he has to say.
All right, we'll run that again. But your calls come first. 334-321-1390. Join us here on the Friday Drive.
Big Eating in Auburn and Opal 27502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 20 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Friday afternoon with Bill and Dan. Drew at the controls. Again, A-Day coming up tomorrow. One of Auburn's leaders defensively is Eugene Asante. He really took advantage last year. First opportunity to get extended playing time.
I want to make sure people remember, like, Eugene Asante was someone we had written off.
Yeah.
Like most people who follow the team, people you talk to, they thought Eugene Asante was a Brian Harsin recruit from the portal who came in, didn't really pan out in year one, and they just thought this is a guy who could step away from football, or he could because injuries had played a role in it, or this is someone who's going to find a new home somewhere else. It just seemed unlikely that he would be able to emerge as one of Auburn's top options at linebacker for this new coaching staff. But that's what happened. I mean, sometimes even though the odds say, eight or nine out of 10 times, this guy's going to go in the portal and leave. Sometimes the guys stick around and they overcome the adversity and they get to play great on the other side of it. And that's the story of Eugene Asante.
Yeah, it really is. And he became one of the more popular players there on the Auburn team. I mean, and definitely a leader. And he was one of the players that we had a chance to spend a little time with yesterday.
I've just been trying to work on understanding the fundamentals of the game and playing more fundamentally sound. I think the effort piece has always been there, but truthfully and honestly, I think the fundamental piece hasn't really been there. So I'm just trying to clean up the fundamentals, footwork and technique, and then, just continuing to hone in on my coverage ability. I think that would help me tremendously, help this defense tremendously. So certainly something I've been focusing on.
What's the adjustment been like with DJ Durkin as defensive coordinator?
Yeah, it's been a great adjustment. I think Coach Durkin is a great addition to the staff. He's a brilliant defensive mind. Certainly somebody that brings energy and intensity every single day, and somebody you love being around and love working with. Especially being a linebacker, somebody that brings that much energy and coaches us the way that we need to be coached. And demands what he demands out of us. So it's just been a great thing to be held to that standard and to have him just showing us the right way and continuing to try to improve his defense in any way we can.
Eugene, aggressive has kind of been the key word in terms of describing DJ Durkin's defense. Describe that to us. What is that like for you, and what is that like for like the linebackers?
Yeah, it just means being violent in everything we do, whether it's block destruction, whether it's finishing on the ball carrier. It's even also applies to DBs in terms of violent finish on the football. You see receivers go up, make those contested catches, and he talks about violent finish on the guy that's receiving the ball. So just playing through their hands and being violent in that way. So aggressive is a great word that we attest to Coach Durkin, and certainly something that he's trying to implement in every facet of the game. It's not just a linebacker on a ball carrier. It's aggressive in all different styles and ways. So aggressive shots on the ball when the running back is running the ball and the ball is loose. So all those things are being applied, and all those things are going to correlate in order for us to be a great defense.
Gene, you mentioned back at the beginning of the spring, you're excited about the young guys. What have you seen from them through the spring now?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of great things in terms of young guys. Particularly in the secondary, man, I'm impressed with all those guys in terms of Colton Hood, somebody that had a great practice the other day, and he's being aggressive on the ball, coming out his breaks and breaking up passes is certainly something he's done at a high level, and he's continuing to do at a high level. We have a transfer, Antonio Kite, we call him Spooty. He's doing a great job in terms of being on that island, when we're in one high defense, and he's just, locking down that side of the field. He's doing great things on that side, and he's got range, can move, got great hips, and able to get out of his breaks. So many other guys. Sylvester Smith. Sylvester Smith plays the game the right way. Certainly as a linebacker, you like seeing guys like Sylvester Smith at a safety position. He will come down and hit you, And he's a great communicator, communicates to the rest of the defense. And Caleb Wooden, he played a little bit last year, but, certainly somebody that's a ball hawk and they'll go make those plays. And we've seen him do it at the highest level. So I'm just excited to see everybody in the secondary. We got guys on the defensive line, too, that are stepping up in the buck room. And, Jamonte, Amaris, all those guys are great additions and transfers as well. So it's going to be a great thing seeing it all come together.
How far has this defense come from day one in the spring?
I think it's came a long way. I was looking at the first practice not too long ago. I'm like, dang, we had so many mental mistakes, mental errors, and just not understanding, trying to build that understanding for the defense. And truthfully and honestly, I think we came a long way. I think there's still hills and mountains we have to climb, and but we embrace those types of things, and we understand that that's a part of the game, and we want to ultimately continue to take steps each day. So when we come back in September, August, we're ready to go.
As a defensive guy, most basketball guys want to play in a fast system.
Yeah.
Defense guys want to play an aggressive system.
Yes, sir.
Is this a fun defense to play?
Yeah, it's 100%. It's a fun day. It's a fun thing always going out there and having, a coach that's going to call. He's not going to lay back. He's going to be aggressive in everything he does. And it's so fun to, try to take the fight to the offense and be disruptive, TFL, sacks, strip sacks. And we know those things are going to correlate into giving our offense more opportunities to be on the field and then for them to score points. So the biggest thing, of course, Durkin harps on is getting the ball back to the offense, And we talk about our mentality on defense when the ball's in the air, when the running back's running the ball, we taking a shot at the ball, it's our ball. Just embracing that mentality. Like if you guys were to take one of something that belongs to me, he wants us to understand, you got to go get what belongs to you. So go get your thing back. So we're trying to embrace that as a defense. We're excited, and it's certainly something that we're looking forward to.
We're out of practice. You're talking all the time. You're bringing energy. I noticed the other day we were out there, Jaron Thompson, the new safety, he's talking a lot too. Is he a guy that you can see even as a newcomer is being real vocal back there?
Yeah, he's somebody that I told the secondary we need somebody in that room similar. Not we don't want anybody to be anybody, but Zion Puckett was such a great leader in terms of communicating, getting everybody aligned, and just you know, rallying the troops in the back end, and somebody I admired truly. And I was like, man, we need somebody in the back end like that. And I really see JT coming into his own and being a leader in that group and just being able to rally the troops and communicating effectively and getting everybody aligned. So he's certainly somebody that's coming into his own, coming from Texas, and we're excited to see how he progresses as well.
He seems like a big energy guy, too, constantly trying to get people fired up.
He's certainly somebody that goes out there. He brings the juice every single day. He's energetic. He flies around the football field. He's been making big plays. I think he had a pick last practice. And, just somebody that's so cerebral out there and smart and uses his skill set to make plays. So
the young linebackers y'all got, Marcus and DJ, just what stands out to you about those guys and how much have you seen them personally grow from the beginning of the spring?
Man, they've grown so much, man, like in terms of everything. And, you know, when you're a freshman, you come in, your head's spinning. You're like, dang, man, I want to play. I want the coach to see that I can play. And then it's just like, you know, it's big jumps and all that. It's a big, like, leap for coming from high school to college. But, man, DeMarcus and DJ have taken a big step. DeMarcus is somebody that flies around the field, is great with his blitzes, gets to the quarterback and is effective. And certainly somebody that has got that range to play that linebacker spot. DJ, man, he's – first couple of days, his head was spinning, I'm not going to lie. But, man, he's kind of settled into his own, and he hones in on the keys that Coach Durkins teaches us. And he's been coming downhill and being extremely violent at the point of attack. And he's somebody that's going to hit you every single time, and you're going to feel his presence. So it's so great to see those guys, and I know they're going to blossom into great linebackers and be the focal point of the defense in years to come.
That is Eugene Asante, Auburn senior linebacker. I really like the linebacker room. I mean, you've got three now with what everyone's talking about, Darian Mossy. Mossy, the transfer from Carolina's, and Eugene, and who am I blanking on?
Austin Keys?
Yeah, Austin Keys. I mean, Auburn's got three seasoned, veteran linebackers. We've heard some good things. Oh, I'll tell you a guy that just, I didn't believe that's who it was. We've heard some good things recently about Robert Woodyard. He looks like a safety. I mean, he is so much leaner than we say.
That's great.
I would imagine he's down 15-plus pounds.
Interesting. I wonder if he thought maybe he needed to reduce bulk or get faster or whatever it was.
He didn't seem as quick last year as the video you saw on him in high school.
Easy to forget, he is still, among Auburn's defensive players, one of the higher one of the more highly touted guys coming out of high school, one of the bigger recruits of anyone on the roster.
Oh yeah. So that combined with the freshman, and you heard Eugene talking about Derek and DJ, the freshman with Joe Phillips moving to the outside, to the Buck or Jack, whatever you prefer there. But I mean, Auburn's got a really good situation, I think, at linebacker. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love to hear from you. Are you interested in A-Day? What are your thoughts on the Final Four? Anything you want to talk about sports-wise here in the final half hour of the Friday Drive.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 20 minutes here on this Friday afternoon with Bill and Dan. Drew at the controls again. Love for you to join in. We talked a little bit a while ago, Dan, about the Alabama-UConn matchup. UConn just destroying teams on the way through here. And Alabama playing better. They're playing better defensively here in the postseason and down the stretch than they did most of the season. But they're going to have a very good game defensively. They're going to have to hit a lot of threes. I don't think there's any question against UConn. UConn has such a balanced attack, and you were talking about Klingon a little while ago with his big game after just right after Grant Nelson had done something that we hadn't seen in the tournament with the points, rebounds, block shots. So, I mean, that's an intriguing matchup. That's a game for a couple of reasons. I mean, it is the marquee game with UConn, the number one overall seed in Alabama. That's the highest matchup in seeds. I'm really interested in the Purdue-NC State game in a matchup of giants. You got one who is really tall and one who is really
Seeds and beanstalks and giants, Bill. You've got Zach Edey and the big fellow DJ Burns, right? I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun. Zach Edey's having a historic NCAA tournament. Tennessee had absolutely no answer for Zach Edey inside. It was, Ziegler struggled and Vescovi was clearly still battling the flu, whatever. But the big difference between those two teams was that Tennessee just had absolutely no answer for what Zach Edey was doing. We'll see if NC State can mount more defense around the basket, but it's tough because he's big and he's skilled and he's smooth. Doesn't seem like he takes very many bad shots, right? Like
he doesn't, and he doesn't try to block every shot either. He blocks plenty.
No, but he contests.
Yes.
He challenges them and contests without fouling and can force you into a low percentage, difficult shot, even if it's not necessarily a blocked shot. And that's, it makes it really tough because you got to start, everything around the rim is affected when he's in the game and he's playing well. And Tennessee, a team that had been taking it to the basket effectively against other teams, they just couldn't. Offensively, they didn't really have an answer for him. And when they started to overcompensate, he was able to kick it out to shooters. And defensively,
Dalton Kanek, had a good game.
Yeah.
And you don't think of NC State having anybody that can really –
everything had to be over the top, right, with Tennessee because you knew it wasn't going to happen around the basket with Zach Edey there.
But, I mean, with NC State, I mean, DJ Burns, I mean, their inside game is a huge part of this run that they have made, this sort of Cinderella-type run where they've been about to be out since the ACC tournament.
Yeah, who thought they were going to be your last ACC team in the field?
Yeah,
I mean, it didn't even look – It didn't look like they were going to make the field with a couple of games left in the regular season, and Kevin Keats looked like he was in real trouble, real danger of losing his job entirely. Instead, a dream run through the ACC tournament. I saw a number. It was the expected win percentage for NC State in all nine of these games that they've won.
Mm-hmm.
And it was over 50 in, I think, five of them, maybe four of them. Maybe four of them. But there were a couple. They had an 18% pregame win percentage in both of the Duke games. They had about a 20% win percentage pregame in the Marquette game. The tournament final against North Carolina. Carolina was a solid. It's not just nine games in a row. It's nine games in a row, including four where NC State was a huge long shot to win. I mean, the odds of the I'm no odds maker here. I saw a post from someone who knows more about these numbers. To predict with the odds NC State has had pregame in every single one of these games, to predict them to win, money line to have them winning all nine of them, it's a 10 or 20,000 to 1 shot what NC State is on right now. It's that kind of run to keep. It's nine must win games in a row that they've won to get to the Final Four. If they win two more of them, it's maybe the least likely national champion. I'm trying to think the longest shot to ever win the whole thing. It might be this NC State.
May be. It may well be. I don't think it's going to happen, but it is fascinating TV tomorrow night.
I think both of the underdogs have a puncher's chance. I mean, I'm expecting UConn-Purdue.
Yeah, in the championship. I think Alabama's got a better chance than NC State.
I think most people are predicting both favorites tomorrow night. That'd be my guess. I think that if one of the underdogs sneaks in, all bets are off. But I also sort of understand. Like I'm kind of dreading. I don't want this. I'm kind of dreading a pair of 20-point UConn wins. Right. Like it kind of feels like we could be getting a. But we'll see. We'll see. Maybe I'm tempting fate by saying that. But it seems like two more business-like UConn victories where it's not a particularly close game in the second half could be on the menu these next two games. We'll see. You know, the longer that game with Alabama is close,
yep,
the more you're going to start to feel the pressure of...
And they've had a lot of games that were close at the half. It's usually early in the second half they just blow people away.
The longer Bama can keep the UConn game close. It's like we said if a team wants to upset Auburn, because Auburn had won so many games by 10 or more in the regular season. If you want to pull off the upset, the longer the game is close, you know, if you can get it to a one or two possession game at the end, maybe you can steal this one, even if on paper. Like, look, if we're playing a best of seven, there's nobody in college basketball I'm taking over UConn, right? If we're playing a best of seven, but you don't got to win seven. You don't got to win four. You got to win one, and we'll see if Bama can do it tomorrow. If the shots are going in. They can hang with some of the best teams in college basketball when their shots are going in. They beat UNC doing it. We'll see if it's enough tomorrow night.
And then, I think both of us sort of expected Arkansas to have a coach by now, even though it's only been a day.
I think we both expected
Eric Musselman went to USC.
I think we thought Chris Beard. Was moving that way, and now reports are Chris Beard. I mean, he's already posted something on social media, and the reports are that Chris Beard has sort of closed the door on being the next Arkansas coach. He's going to stay at Ole Miss. Rumors that Arkansas could be targeting Kansas State coach Jerome Tang or McNeese State coach Will Wade. We'll see who else is on.
I think Tang is the
sounds like
is
Tang
the
is your
top target now.
I still wonder if there would be any pushback from the SEC if a team wanted to hire Will Wade, or if it's all forgiven.
I wonder how much publicly there would be, but I think you'd have something along the lines of the way the Southeastern Conference handled Hugh Freeze.
That's what I think. I do wonder if there would be like the SEC, because I don't know if they can legally say we don't want you to hire this guy. Do wonder if the SEC would let it be known that there's.
I think the conference office can let the schools know that they wouldn't be pleased.
They wouldn't, yeah. And I wonder if maybe another season without Will Wade is what the SEC would like before Will Wade is sort of welcomed in, especially while LSU still picks up the pieces from what happened while he was there.
So it'll be interesting. I know Arkansas doesn't want to go much longer because their players are all hopping into the portal, and whoever comes in doesn't want to be that far behind in trying to reload the roster.
They landed an Ivy League commitment and Arkansas, and he is I believe
without
he's,
a head
no,
coach?
No, 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 UMass. No, the UMass commitment earlier this week.
Oh, okay.
Committed to Arkansas, and he has already changed his commitment.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say it's impossible to imagine you're going to be adding players when you don't know who the coach is.
Where do you think he's going?
UConn.
Yeah, no. He went from he's UMass
guy.
UMass going. He had committed to Arkansas.
Oh, he's going to USC.
That's right.
Go across the country.
He's following Eric Musselman to USC.
Yeah, so that's like, well, why stop halfway across the country? Go ahead and go all the way. All right, tell you what, we'll get to our final break. We've got we got a couple of player interviews. We haven't played Robert Lewis. There's a guy who has really gotten a lot of talk this spring. You know, it didn't come in as highly publicized as the freshman or even Sam Jackson. But the Georgia State transfer is someone that all the offensive players we've talked to have talked about what a nice addition and how important they think he will be for the offense this year. So if we don't have any calls, we'll let you hear some of the interviews, the interview with Robert Lewis, when we come back here on the Friday Drive.
How is our court?
Let's get back to the drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final segment here on this Friday. Let's get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar Inspector. Is next. Hey, Specter.
What's up, Specs?
Hey. I never talked to you guys about my bracket. I filled it out, and I got UConn and Purdue in the championship game.
There you go.
Let me tell you something. My East bracket was absolutely destroyed except for UConn. The same with the West. I had Alabama not even getting that far.
Oh, no, I didn't either.
And in the South, same thing. I'm completely destroyed. I had Houston playing Purdue to go to the championship game.
Spectre, I had UConn winning it all when I filled the bracket out on Sunday, and then I talked myself out of it and said, everyone's going to have UConn. You know, my policy with brackets, talk with Jake Crane about this the week came out. My policy is no, it's don't pick your favorite or the favorite. So I said, I'm not going to pick Auburn. I'm not going to pick UConn. Got to find somebody else. My champion was Tennessee. They're out. So I'm probably not going to win any pools. But I do have Bama in the Final Four in my bracket. Yeah. I did predict Bama to win the West.
Yeah, my Midwest bracket, I had it completely. It's been complete ever since, except for when. Now I got UConn winning the championship. But my Midwest was. I didn't have anything wrong on it.
Well, that's a whole lot better than I. There you go. Not mine.
Yeah. But that's the only bracket I had right. The rest of them were completely destroyed. But I got UConn winning it all. I guess I'm one of those.
Well, it's hard to pick against them. I mean, what they've done for the last 2 years has just been amazing.
I mean, they're a 12-point favorite tomorrow night, and they will be a sizable favorite in the championship game if they get there.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to get that in before you got off the air.
All right. Appreciate it, Spectre.
Good stuff, Spectre. Appreciate it.
Again, Final Four tomorrow night with Purdue, NC State shortly after 5, followed by Alabama and UConn.
You want to still try to run some of this?
Yeah, let's run a look. Robert Lewis, a transfer from Georgia State, has come in and really assumed a leadership and a prominent role, looking like a probable starter for Auburn at receiver. And we had a chance to spend some time with him.
You're pretty fast.
Yeah, sir. I got a couple. You know, I got some speed too. I think my mom likes to joke around and say I get it from her side of the family. But that's kind of true because most of her side of the family ran track in high school. So, to set kind of records there. Yeah, okay. Putnam County where you're from. So, yeah, I got some speed too.
Yeah, obviously. Me and Jason don't know anything about it.
No, I don't know. Never have. What's the transition been like for you coming in and jumping in, getting used to the school offense, kind of learning everything? How's it been?
Transition's been good, really, with coming to school. I think the classes are kind of a little bit harder, but, it's nothing too big for me. I think I'm willing to take on that challenge with, the academic side. But getting adjusted to the offense, I think it's been pretty smooth for me as well. I like to think that I've been taught good at Georgia State. So, really, everything that they're teaching here is really kind of the same things. And knowing it's an up-tempo offense, that's kind of what we ran at Georgia State, so I'm kind of familiar with, the offense of fast-paced movement. So getting adjusted to the offense is pretty simple. And, as long as you know the playbook, as long as you know what you're doing inside the playbook, the sky's the limit. You can play as fast as you want to, as long as you know what the defense is doing and such of that, things like that. So I think it's been pretty smooth for me.
Robbie, you've been around for a few years playing. You played inside and out. You're working at both this spring again?
Yes, sir. Well, mostly I'm in the inside, but when we go in 12 personnel, I can go to outside. We'll be going to outside, but mostly in the spring I've been working on the inside, so that's where I'm at right now.
Talk me through your recruitment out of high school, kind of how that went.
Well, my first offer, I got that at the end of the junior season, going to my senior season, I got my first offer from Rutgers. And then I started picking up, multiple offers down the road for DB, for play defensive cornerback from big schools like Tennessee, Purdue. And then I had another offer from outside, for receiver from Kentucky and Louisville. But, I wasn't on their board, the highest on the board, coaches have board. I just wasn't ranked as high, so trying to commit there wouldn't take me. But I had option at Georgia State. They really wanted me there, and I took advantage of that opportunity because it was close to home. My parents could come see the games, all the home games if they wanted to. And then, I like Georgia State too, because growing up, didn't really know too much about Georgia State, but we did used to go to their games my freshman year in high school, so I was kind of familiar with Georgia State being at the program.
Talking about your experience there, just kind of how it went for you.
I enjoyed it at Georgia State. Honestly, not too many people probably would say the same thing about their experience, but I had nothing to complain about. I was just grateful for the opportunity to play football, to be on the collegiate level. I think it was a great time for me. I enjoyed my teammates, my coaches there. I think I learned a lot of good information, gained a lot of experience. So hopefully I can be able to translate that here at Auburn University.
Being one of the guys that's an older, experienced guy and coming in, even though you're new, how has that been to take on a little bit of a leadership role, even though you're one of the newer guys here?
It's kind of been a slow but steady pace for me. Not trying to force anything on anybody, just trying to fill out everybody, because I'm not the type of person just to say, hey, you do this at the beginning. I kind of want to show how good I am on the field, just my work ethic, just to show the younger guys, like, you know, if you want to be good, just the things you have to do. So just kind of being that vocal leader, being more of a vocal leader, and just, you know, just being a better example. I think that's something that I'm continuing to work on and something that I will continue to do in the future. Right.
The receiver room was a concern in the past. What are your thoughts on the guys around you here this spring?
Well, I really think that everybody in the receiver room is able to play in this offense. We have a lot of good receivers. You know, just talking to some of the guys that were here last year, I could tell that, you know, they got some good, they're good at football. It's just some things that wasn't working out in their way, whether it be, you know, injuries or, you know, the offensive style. But everything with the new coming guys, like, you know, the young guys, Cam Coleman, Bryce Kane, everybody that's coming in, you know, we still got two more to come in. Those guys are really, you know, showing, you know, they have a bright future. So I really, you know, help with me, with my experience, hopefully I can, you know, rub off on some of the other guys. And, you know, just continue to build relationships and continue to get better with everybody else. So.
Robert.
That was Auburn receiver Robert Lewis, new transfer from Georgia State. Will make his debut tomorrow at A-Day. Coverage of A-Day here on the Auburn Network family of stations. Wings 94.3 will have you covered tomorrow with Andy Burcham and the gang. Auburn baseball this weekend as well. You can catch on Wings 94.3. Auburn and Tennessee, big series for Butch and the team at Plainsman Park. That game starting shortly. As a matter of fact, Bill Cameron on his way to the ballpark right now. For Bill, for Drew, this is Dan Peck signing off. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you on Monday. Have a great A-Day weekend. Good night.